No questions. Set. Maybe this is okay as it is. I'll share the PowerPoint presentation. And you no, I stopped sharing because I wanted to put the camera off. That's something that I don't really need right now. Stop video. Yep. And then another new effort to do this sharing. Yep. So the subject of my lecture this morning is complexities and richness of doing research on family therapy. How come? My background as a clinical psychology comes from mostly from child psychiatric efforts and mental health work with families with children. And that's why I quite early received training in family therapy, and afterwards I've also achieved the status of family therapy trainer. And my academic efforts are mostly focused on issues of family therapeutic interventions and family-centered treatments. And that's why this subject of research on family therapy. So my lecture is about I'm trying to contextualize somehow this family therapy as a therapy mode. How does it fit to the overall field of psychotherapy? I defined first psychotherapy as it is defined in some textbooks and as a public knowledge. And then I speak about family therapy, couple therapy, marital therapy, and family therapy, which all form the overall concept of systemic therapies. But these are, of course, somehow theoretically also different issues because systemic theory is something that is used in order to develop family therapy, but there are also other theoretical backgrounds involved in family therapeutic interventions. So that's those three first points are have to do with that fact. And after defining these ideas, I'm going to speak about the issues of psychotherapy research. What is it all about? Then in the end, we go through my own example of possibilities and challenges in the case of doing family therapeutic research. I have led a family therapy research program in one child psychiatric unit, and I have the kind of protocol for the data gathering in this presentation, in the end of this presentation. As a teacher, I'm such person that is not insulted if you interrupt me or want to get some more information. So I would be pretty happy if you have questions, if you are able to say those aloud. And in the end of this lecture, I'm going to divide you in those breakout rooms so that you can somehow negotiate with one another about these details and some issues that might be somehow disturbing you or state unclear or whatever like that. But let's go to the issues of this lecture. Psychotherapy. What is psychotherapy? It is all about. It's a kind of curious thing because it's something that is used, for example, in popular films and popular TV series. And it kind of with kind of romanticized picture of it, but as an intervention mode, it belongs to the medical sciences or medical ways of improving one's mental health, and medical science has tried to adapt psychotherapy as a kind of a thing of their own. But social psychology, social work, clinical psychology, these kind of fields of science are also involved and have very much to do with development of psychotherapy. And I've first definition of psychotherapy in my lecture is by Nolan Höcksma and Atkinson and Hildegard, because this is kind of basic book of our psychology studies, and psychotherapy in that book is defined as the treatment of mental disorders by psychological rather than physical or biological means. This is very strict and narrow, but it's also very important definition because it shows how psychotherapy is used. It's used by psychological means, and medication does not belong to psychotherapy. It can be integrated into treatment, but it doesn't belong to psychotherapy. The second definition comes from the book Abnormal Psychology, which says that psychotherapy is a primarily verbal means of helping troubled individuals change their thoughts, feelings, and behavior to reduce distress and to achieve greater life satisfaction. This all shows something of the tools that are used in psychotherapy. It's mostly about conversation, what is also emphasized in this third definition, but let's go to that a little bit later. Primarily verbal means. It says that the verbal means are the first, maybe the first tool that is used in order to share information in family or psychotherapeutic context. And the information has to do with one's thoughts, one's feelings, or one's personal experiences. That would be maybe more accurate way of saying it's not about feelings, but personal experiences, but also behavior. And what the aim is to reduce distress and to achieve greater life satisfaction. In the early days of my clinical career, I participated the family therapy congress in a country that doesn't exist anymore. It was in Czechoslovakia, in Prague. Now it's part the capital of the Republic of Czech, and the Canadian family therapy professor Carl Thom defined psychotherapy as a conversation oriented towards healing. So all these three definitions have this interactive character inside themselves, and so it's this interaction is very important. But it's they these are also a bit narrow definitions, but Carl Thom wanted to make a very condensed definition of psychotherapy because in many countries, this debate of what is psychotherapy really about, it was going on and on and on, and the very specialists couldn't agree how should we define it. And I think that this Tom's narrow definition is quite accurate and good one. Psychotherapy is a conversation oriented towards healing, no matter what is the way of doing psychotherapy, whether it is individual psychotherapy, whether it's couples therapy, family therapy, group therapy, and all these ways of doing psychotherapy with a different kind of social units. All they have many theoretical orientations, for example, behavioral, cognitive behavioral, psychodynamic, psychoanalytic, systemic, and so on and so on, humanistic, whatever are all those possibilities. Let's make it this a bit more complicated. The Finnish Association for Mental Health, Suomen Mielenterveysseura, published this definition. The association has changed its name. Now it's Mieli ry, but the definition of them is quite accurate, and it's more detailed one than the previous definitions. Psychotherapy is a form of treatment based on the interaction of two or more people. In psychotherapy, a person talks with a psychotherapist or in a therapy group, for example, about the things they need help processing. Through discussion, they can process difficult experiences and try to find solutions for them. The client of a psychotherapist may be an individual or a couple, family or a group. This is something that I tried to open with these earlier definitions. The unit of the treatment is missing in all those previous definitions. When we read about psychotherapy research, it is typical that most of it deals with the individual psychotherapy, where there is the psychotherapy client or the patient and psychotherapist. So the interaction is dyadic. There are two persons present in that room, and that is reported in most of psychotherapy research reports or articles. But couple therapy and group therapy and family therapy, in the room there are more persons than the psychotherapist and the client. The client might be the client couple. So there are two persons in that couple, and the therapist not necessarily works alone anymore when there is this client couple. A therapist might have the co-worker or in some occasions also a therapy team where there are several team members present in the session. Nowadays, we have to be also flexible enough to read what Wikipedia says about psychotherapy. Wikipedia says that psychotherapy is the use of psychological methods, particularly when based on regular personal interaction, to help a person change behavior and overcome problems in desired ways. Psychotherapy aims to improve an individual's well-being and mental health, to resolve or mitigate troublesome behaviors, beliefs, compulsions, thoughts, or emotions, and to improve relationships and social skills. Certain psychotherapies are considered evidence-based for treating some diagnosed mental disorders. Others have been criticized as pseudoscience. And definition goes on, or this is more detailed way of describing what is included in previous definition. There are over 1,000 different psychotherapy techniques, some being minor variations, while others are based on very different conceptions of psychology, ethics, how to live, what is good life, what is not so good, or what is bad, or techniques. Most involve one-to-one sessions between client and therapist, but some are conducted with groups, including families. Psychotherapists may be mental health professionals, such as psychiatrists, psychologists, clinical social workers, marriage and family therapists, or professional counselors. Psychotherapists may also come from a variety of other backgrounds, and depending on the jurisdiction, may be legally regulated, voluntarily regulated, or unregulated, and the term itself may be protected or not. For example, in Finland, it is in the Finnish jurisdiction, it is named the profession of psychotherapist, so that if somebody without psychotherapy training names herself or himself as a psychotherapist, it has the features of criminal act and false advertising or whatever. So this is definitely regulated, but there are differences. Even in European countries, there is variety of ways of describing or variety of ways of defining what is the legal way of doing psychotherapy. Okay, I said that I want to contextualize family therapy, couple therapy, marital and family therapy in this field of psychotherapy, because it's so rich and varied. The previous slide said that there are over 1,000 different psychotherapy techniques. What is typical of family therapy? It is multi-actor setting of psychotherapy, meaning that it is somehow similar to the group therapy and group interventions. The number of people is more than two, therapists and client. And it is the family background that differentiates the family therapeutic or couple therapeutic interventions from other group interventions. It is important to recognize that families have a joint history. They have a shared picture of what has happened to them, even if they disagree about the past and past happenings. So this is an important part of those systemic therapies. And as the client in individual psychotherapies is always exclusively, it is a single person. In systemic therapies or in family therapy, couple therapy, marital and family therapy, the client is not necessary. It actually never means an individual human being, even though the documents might be written under the name of one of the clients. But the client is a wider social unit. And the problems treated can be, they can be both individual psychological problems or interactive problems. Systemic therapies somehow are able to activate the social support of the system in order to help the single person or the entire system, so that the effects of therapy are visible in all the members of the system, even though it might be that the symptoms are individual or the symptomatic behavior, for example, heavy arguing or quarreling in family diminishes, and it of course has impact on all the members of the family if the life becomes more peaceful or people are able to enjoy family life and feel themselves happiness and that kind of things. As I used the concept family therapy, couple therapy, and marital and family therapy, it is important that we are able to reflect on those. These original concepts were loaded with the social situation in the Western societies during the era when the ways of working were developed. And it seems that, for example, the concept marital and family therapy, it somehow includes or at least implicitly there is present the ideal of nuclear family. So that the parents have been married and they have a number of children in family. And those children should be biologically produced so that they are not adopted or something like that. This ideal of nuclear family somehow dominated the development of the systemic therapies or early family therapy interventions. This ideal of nuclear family also included, but no, it wasn't actually articulated in any mode of therapy. But for example, strategic family therapy included the idea of patriarchal family therapy, where the role of father was emphasized in the interventions. And it might have been because fathers were the providers of the family life standards or means for the keep the family life standards, and the place of the woman was in that era, it was at home and do those homeworks, and that was somehow present that fathers or men lost their role in the child rearing practices or as important psychological objects of the of their own children, and many of the interventions were focused on somehow returning the father back into the family life, and that those are present, for example, in the earlier books of Jay Haley in 1970s. If you are curious, become somehow curious about this fact, you can really read those early family therapeutic textbooks, how this ideal of nuclear family is really included in them. Also, the role of legal relationships and the connection to legal definitions, couple and marital therapy, and this old country music classic, Married by the Bible, Divorced by the Law. These show that the belief systems and law were important part or still are in family life. And but this belief, these beliefs were part of defining also the name of therapy mode. If we speak about marital and family therapy, we somehow presuppose that the couple should always be married if we take them into this kind of therapy. But one of the facts is that we meet quite a lot of couples who are not married, who live together, who have different ways of defining their relationships. And it's not up to therapists to decide what is the good way of having their relationships. We have to somehow tolerate this uncertainty and help people decide for themselves, not to decide for them, but help them to decide for themselves what is the good way of living this life. One central key ingredient of systemic therapies or family therapy, couple therapy, is the fact that the persons with whom the problems are somehow connected are also present in the session. As in individual psychotherapy, these important persons are present as intrapsychic objects or imaginary beings. They are not really present in the therapy room, even though their presence can somehow be felt that they are important persons in the client's life. And the therapist might make kind of comments or interpretations, making this important role visible. But these persons are not really present in flesh and blood, but in systemic therapies, in all ways or modes of systemic therapies, these persons are usually present. And so the therapist has to be somehow cautious enough, careful enough not to insult these persons that, for example, the symptomatic family member is blaming for one's own difficulties. If let's imagine a situation when myself with my three siblings and my parents would have entered a family therapy session, and in that situation I would have felt somehow unjust obligations or duties by my parents, and I would blame them aloud to the therapists, and therapist would say that your parents are horrible persons. That kind of situation cannot be done in systemic therapies because those persons are present. So what the therapist has to do is to somehow open the sensitive issues to conversation. And these sensitive issues are important part of therapy, because if people are afraid to speak about sensitive issues, it very often means that actually the therapy is not that helpful anymore. So this key ingredient, even though the composition of family in every session might not be the same, it is important to remember that this gives or forms quite important setting of preconditions in family therapeutic situation. I somehow said that family therapy, couple therapy, and marital and family therapy belong to this family of systemic therapies or systems therapy, and it is said that the systems therapy is a form of psychotherapy by therapists who apply systems theory in their work. And I would be even more strict saying that all family therapists or couple therapists, no matter what is their theoretical basic orientations, apply somehow systems theory in their work because of this principle that the participants share some past and some history and some beliefs. So systems theory is definitely present in these settings. And this systems theory, the concept has been actively developed to an alternative or more traditional ways of describing therapies with multi-actor settings, so that when I describe this traditional patriarchal family system, it nowadays systemic therapies or even family therapy has been opened up, so that all kind of couples are allowed to have that kind of help. Married couples, cohabiting couples, and same-sex couples, and different kind of families, nuclear families, remarried families, step families, families of cohabiting couples, families of where parents have adopted children in their family. So this has definitely been a good development in order to provide this kind of psychotherapy for those persons who live in our societies. If we would somehow limit it to the old-fashioned nuclear families, that would mean that we wouldn't be able or wouldn't be allowed to take that kind of clients, which form a quite big part of our populations. And this, when this concept has been opened up, it means that theoretically and practically, therapists have been able to recognize the role of patriarchy, and in the work of, especially in the work with violence, the power issues have been also been recognized, even though those were recognized in that strategic family therapy which I mentioned before. One of the latest fields of family therapeutic or systems therapy therapy modes is this feminist family therapy, who has been developed from the maybe from the end of 1980s. And it has been developed into a form of collaborative, egalitarian, non-sexist intervention, which is applicable to both men and women. Not, it hasn't to do with female sex only, but it's applicable to both men and women. And it addresses family gender role, patriarchal attitudes, and social and economic inequalities in male-female relationships. That might not be so self-evident as it is nowadays. And for example, myself, I haven't ever defined myself as a feminist family therapist, because I'm not so much aware of their techniques or that kind of ideas. But this way of thinking, I think that it is everyday practice in most of the field of systems therapies nowadays. And I think that feminist family therapy authorities have made quite an impressive and important contribution to the field of family therapy while they have addressed these ideas or provided us with these new modes of seeing the relationships between different genders and different modes of families and so on. Yes, now I think that I have really defined these psychotherapies and tried somehow contextualize the position of systems therapies inside the field of psychotherapy. And we go to now to the direction of psychotherapy research. But if somebody has something to ask about these definitions that I provided, please. If you have any questions, so now would be a good point to do that. No, nobody seems to be interested enough to make that kind of questions. Then we go to this field of, or the issue of psychotherapy research, which brings us closer to this title of our today's lecture, Complexities and Richness of Doing Research on Family Therapy. It's also doing research on psychotherapy, it could be, but I wish to be, speak about family therapy mostly. What is psychotherapy research all about? Everybody or most people who become interested in psychotherapy want to know if it is really helpful. What's the impact of psychotherapy? Is it useful to go into psychotherapy and pay so much money or use so much time in that kind of work where this outcome is somehow connected with uncertainty? We don't really know what is going to happen, but what we want to know if it's helpful. And this outcome research, which is the first one in my list, is the mode of psychotherapy research, which tries to somehow show if psychotherapy is effective. Outcome research is carried out mostly as randomized clinical trials, where it applies this experimental method of doing comparisons between different groups. And this experimental research is somehow included in the name randomized clinical trials. There is always this research group and comparison groups, so, and that these are very important part of randomized clinical trials. And outcome research is in itself is divided in three different fields. There is this first one is efficacy research. Efficacy research refers to the research which aims to reveal the effect in pure optimal or laboratory-like setting, so that the client group would be the clients would be similar enough between each other so that they have these similar symptoms, for example, mood disorders or depression as a mood disorder. And this kind of limitations are part of difficulties to then apply these results of randomized clinical trials into the not so laboratory-like settings in everyday practice. And that in order to that kind of applications and develop those applications outside the laboratory-like setting means that it has been developed this effectiveness research, where the effect is studied in more naturalistic setting, and in aiming to show the outcome of everyday clinical practice of typical or usual psychotherapists, not by those laboratory-like settings where this, for example, in Finland, this efficacy research with depression is in difficulties because in Finland it is typical to medicate oneself with alcohol. It might be a curious fact, but In Finland, people typically use alcohol in order to medicate themselves, and this might lead to increasing risk of developing that kind of problems, but these are usually excluded in efficacy research. If people have two kind of problems, then it's problematic to include them into this treatment research or outcome research. But in effectiveness research, those kind of exclusions are not used. The third form of effectiveness research is this research on cost effectiveness, where it is studied whether it is cheap enough to produce that kind of help. And a dyadic work where there is client present and the therapist present, it might help that this calls for so little professionals in the setting that it might be a kind of model of producing help in that kind of. And when I said that in some systemic therapies, there might be this therapy team, for example, of two or three professionals, it or immediately raises the price per session if three professionals are present. And this cost effectiveness has to do with these questions. If help is provided, what is the cost of the overall treatment program? And when I'm speaking about systemic therapies in this lecture, the kind of prejudice that people easily connect with this way of helping people is that that it must be very expensive because there are so many professionals present in those sessions. But let's see. Then the other form besides of outcome research is this process research, which tries to study variables and factors connected with the psychotherapeutic process. These variables might be both inner psychological variables, and they might be external variables, which are connected, for example, for the life situation of the client, work situation of the client, family situation of the client. But it also is definitely or more focused on the relationship, therapeutic relationship, and it is interested in this relationship and therapist variables, which are part of this process research. And I have always also in this list this research of common factors, because most modes of psychotherapy are want to emphasize themselves as the mode of psychotherapy, which is enough. But psychotherapy research has, should I say, from 1970s, focused more and more on these common factors. It seems that no matter for the theoretical differences between different ways of doing psychotherapy, it seems that there are these common factors included in psychotherapeutic situation, and these common factors are something that are present in nearly all modes of psychotherapy. For example, the kind of variable in relationship terms is trust. If the client trusts in the therapist's way of describing the problems, the client has sought help for, if the client trusts in the interventions, because therapy seems to be logical and doing somehow in a client-centered way all his or her interventions, and these kind of factors are common in all the psychotherapists. Client has to rely on the therapist's aims and his or her ways of doing the interventions. And work alliance is one of the most studied common factor since 1990s, let's say about 20 years or 25 years. It has been a very, very heavily studied object of psychotherapy. The third way of doing psychotherapy research, of these traditional ways of doing psychotherapy research, is this progress research, which tries to find what is the cause of individual psychotherapy process and how does the change take place. This is of course a big question. It seems that it covers more or less both outcome research and progress research, but actually this progress research is a specified way of answering to for these questions. And I must say that outcome research is dominated by quantitative approaches, quantitative research. Process research is qualitative and quantitative approaches are both present in process research, but it might be that it is more dominated by quantitative research. Progress research is a way of doing kind of mixed studies where the interest is in the fact that what is helpful? What is helpful objectively? Something that can be studied by different external researchers, or what is found helpful by the client who describes his or her subjective experience. And that means that there must be kind of qualitative way of doing that progress research included. I would say that these mixed methods are a developing way of doing psychotherapy, but I have a quite strong conviction that qualitative research dominates this progress research more than quantitative research modes. But these three traditional modes of psychotherapy research are not all that there is. There is also present the study of client experience, so that the experts of that experience are those clients themselves. And the researcher tries to find this research perspective in order to somehow make plausible accounts of that client experience. Then we have this discovery-oriented research, which is one of the newest way of doing psychotherapy research. Discovery orientation means that we have to learn to ask new kind of questions, the questions that have not been asked before. And it is impossible to say what are the next important questions from this discovery-oriented research perspective, because novelty is so important part of these discoveries. Then we of course have this which seems that it is both traditional and both also new way of doing research, is this conceptual research, which has these perspectives of philosophy of science, epistemology, and history of ideologies, because psychotherapy is not an independent phenomenon which has developed with its own logic only, but it has definitely connections for both philosophy, both in epistemology, a field of philosophy which has to do with the formation of knowledge, and it has also roots in history of ideologies. For example, when I spoke about feminist family therapy, it is connected into the idea that women are also important members of society. It's not only male-dominated society which makes us to develop these modes of treatment. And I think that is the importance of that therapeutic field, for example. But we also must remember that in many therapeutic orientations, the first mode of study has been to make very intensive case histories or case reports in order to show the process, interventions, progress, and outcome of the specific mode. And these case histories, they are not the same as the case study, as case study is defined in some research handbooks. It is different, even though the way of reporting might be quite close to case studies, but the research setting has not been originally that of doing research. It might be that of providing treatment. And for example, Sigmund Freud published very many case histories, which have been published also in paperbacks and in very many modes. His famous case histories are that of little Hans, a little five or six year old boy who was afraid of horses, and his father consulted therapist Freud, who provided some information for the father in order to help this Hans to deal with this fear of horses. He also published the case of Wolfman, the Ratman, Dora. These are part of his publications, and they are kind of very famous in the field of development of psychotherapies. Donald Woods Winnicott also published a case where he didn't meet the patient himself, the Biggle. It was a little child who had problems of his own, but in this case, Winnicott met not both parents, but only father also. And Jay Haley, who was a leading figure of strategic family therapy, he wrote the case, The Modern Little Hands. The title already shows that who was the important audience besides of family therapeutic audience. It was definitely directed to the field of psychodynamic psychotherapy and the followers of Sigmund Freud, because Haley showed that these kind of symptoms of being afraid, symptoms of fear, they have to do with family issues. And it is also a case which shows this importance of nuclear family. And it is not this importance of nuclear family is not dealt with at all in that case report, but it shows how the role of father becomes more and more important in the life of this modern little Hans. Psychotherapy research has some methodological concerns. The research is always carried out with some guidance, guiding ideas, orientations, metaphors, and theories. And what is problematic with these ideas, orientations, metaphors, and theories is that they have not necessarily been explicitly defined in the report or articulated in a plausible way. They might be implicit or invisible in these articles or invisible in these reports. I think that the reviewers of article manuscripts are very much alarmed if nowadays these guiding orientations were hidden, but this has been the case quite a lot. But these guiding ideas should be made open in the report in order to provide some ways to replicate these studies. And there are definitely two dominant, at least these two dominant metaphors for psychotherapy research have been shown to be important. These are drug metaphor and the conversation metaphor. Drug metaphor has in it included this ideal of statistical, mathematical, and psychometric ways of doing inquiry. These have very much to do with natural sciences, which use these kind of ways of doing research. A drug metaphor has also in it this medical model of problems of psychological well-being and mental health. These problems are looked at as diseases with symptoms. And secondly, drug metaphor includes also the medical model of influence in psychotherapy, which is seen as similar to medication, that of medication. In some experimental or randomized clinical trials, the criteria of interventions is it is that it is manualized. It's the same intervention for all the clients. But what psychotherapy research has shown that it is very difficult to keep the intervention as similar if the therapists, there are plenty of therapists involved in the study. All the therapists have their individual way of doing interventions, even though they are using these manuals. But this division into these two metaphoric fields of the drug metaphor and conversation metaphor has opened up real conversation in the field of psychotherapy research. The conversation metaphor emphasizes that there somehow the ideal of individualized models of social processes in therapeutic contexts. What I emphasized about this difficulty to do similar interventions, and because the problems have always somehow the client's personality involved in it, how the client describes it, this client's way of description should somehow lead the conversation and leading to individualized model of social processes and individualized interventions also. Conversation metaphor includes also some kind of the influence of psychotherapy has to do with learning, so that people learn new ways of dealing with their problems, even if the problems are very intrapsychic, or if they are behavioral, if they are experiential, so that this psychotherapeutic conversation has to do very much with negotiation, and this negotiation is very important in this sense. And psychological distress or psychological problems of mental health are seen as problems of meaning making and meaning anomalies. And there is definitely a developmental approach to psychotherapeutic change as semiotic process and evolution of meanings. Then if we go to the essential focus of this lecture is this family therapy research. The golden standards of intervention research and outcome research mean that the dominant mode of research is the quantitatively oriented experimental or quasi-experimental research. And these modes of doing research are based on the ideas of experiment as the basic tool of scientific way of to reach new kind of knowledge. And most of the process research follow this mode, being constructed as variable-based and psychometric measures. Both the outcome research and process research as variable-based settings have great difficulty to deal with the developmental nature of the process, the evolution of issues connected with change. And the variables in the research setting are the same in the pre-intervention, post-intervention, and follow-up stages. This is, of course, not specific to family therapy research. The situation is very similar in all psychotherapy research. And this phenomenon has been named by William B. Stiles, an emeritus professor of psychotherapy research from Ohio University, Miami University in Ohio, not Florida. And they named this problem as the responsiveness problem because the development of psychological development changes the client's way of seeing his or her problems, and that kind of responsiveness is very challenging to include in the research setting. In the lived experience of both the clients and the therapists, part of the variables evolve and transform, and part of those are non-existent during successful therapy, as the problems dissolve in the end of treatment. It's very challenging to measure or try to formulate a description of the problem when it has dissolved or it has changed completely. And these problems stood strong in family therapy research also. Most of the traditional variable-based measures originated from individual psychotherapists and were applied in family therapy research. And these measures did not include any kind of understanding of systemic theory and in the role of interaction. and systemic ways of working with multi-actor settings. For example, Beck Depression Inventory, which is a very traditionally developed individual inventory of the mood disorders. And it made that the role of symptoms as easy to follow variables was highlighted in the outcome research. And this was present both in individual psychotherapy research and in family therapy research. And since the multi-actor setting was complicated to study, most of the research focused on couple therapy settings only with adult participants. And quite a big majority of family therapy researchers were satisfied with these situations, and they said that they feel helpless with settings which include children, because children do not behave necessarily in a rational way. They don't want to participate in the conversation. They want to play. They want to play games or go around the room and not to sit peacefully on their chairs. That kind of problems made the situation quite challenging. And manualized forms of therapy were also part of those couple therapy settings that were studied. But I think that the situation has changed quite radically from the 1990s. The development of qualitative research settings and data gathering modes and that kind of aided family therapy research to researchers to do very, very many kinds of therapy research compared to the 80s and 70s. One of the earliest serious efforts to study family therapeutic settings was carried out by Salvador Minuchin, an Argentinian originally psychiatrist, who, when Minuchin and his associates tried to find systemic understanding of idiopathic epilepsy and diabetes. So these diseases or problems had to do very much with somatic health, and diabetes definitely needs biological medication in order to be treated effectively. He tried to find this understanding with very traditional tools of individual psychological testing and also measuring bodily level with the tests of free fatty acids, which was seen to be important in diabetes. And so this even though the interventions of Minuchin's group were all systemic therapy, the research methods were definitely connected only to individual health and individual psychological ways of defining the problems. And when Minuchin tried to do this, some other important and leading figures of family therapy, e.g. Jay Haley, ridiculed and questioned also scientific efforts to grasp the process of systemic therapy and therapeutic change in the very context. Haley tried to make jokes of all the situations that had been studied in more traditional psychotherapy research, and said that this way of doing research is unfruitful in the field of family therapy. But I think that this was quite a disastrous stage family therapy, development of family therapy research, that it meant that family therapy lost the first stages of rigorous research, while many other significant treatment modes did not. And in order to be a plausible way of treating problems of mental health, the research basis must be in order. But the situation was such that these important figures somehow made their protests and jokes about research. But on the other hand, development went also to these other directions. Lyman C. Wynn was the editor of this book, The State of the Art in Family Therapy Research, Controversies and Recommendations. Wynn had began his way of doing research with systemic orientation already in 1950s. There were three leading figures in internationally in 1950s, and they were all in America. One was anthropologist Gregory Bateson, and was the second one was Lyman C. Wynn, and the third one was Murray Bowen. They somehow recognized the role of interaction and role of communication in the way of describing these problems. And Wynn published this book in the beginning of 90s, so that the research had developed even there were these jokes and protests allowed by Jay Haley and his associates. And American Family Therapeutic Association published this research journal already in 1992, saying that the research is the way of getting to the bottom of things. So that the research is inevitable and really necessary in order to develop family therapeutic orientations. And these questions have been tried to solve, and these have been solved besides using the well-known and acknowledged research tools through intensive development of qualitative methodology, which I mentioned already before, and different research settings in order to provide the researchers with naturalistic enough data so that we could also generalize the knowledge that we receive through studies. Family therapy has not aimed very much on these laboratory-like settings or pure information in that sense. And development of mixed method research has been very important part of this development. Naturalistic research has been recognized as a plausible way of reaching new understanding of the possibilities of different modes of psychotherapy. So that naturalistic research is not way of excluding biological factors, but the researchers are very open to all kind of information that is part of the setting. And it is typical that in medical care, people are both medicated and they are provided with therapy. So this, for example, this kind of situations are very typical in medical care. Also in or mostly in psychiatry. And most usual application of family therapy research has been to carry out series of intensive qualitative case studies so that earlier findings have been tested and new nuances have been found and recognized, and so that phenomenons are richly enough described. There is always the challenge of solving the shift from analyzing individual or dyadic processes to multi-actor processes. When I said that psychotherapy researchers or family therapy researchers have been interested in couple therapy because it's somehow the number of information providers is more limited, and there are no unpredictable children present in the sessions. But that means that we would somehow neglect the family situations out of research, and there is constant need for methods to grasp the social process, including all the family members. And that social process includes interaction, but it includes also interaction with family members and therapists and therapy team members. There is this third dimension, the need for methods to grasp is the meanings and generation of meanings. I spoke about semiotic processes before. This is definitely connected with that. Then there is this multi-actor dimension and power relations. They are present. I mentioned that this has been made somehow visible and important due to research with family violence and in intimate family or intimate personal relationships. But power relations are somehow present in all forms of families. Then there is this normality and pathology in the family setting. It is typical that when people seek help, they speak about problems, and the problematic situation is described in detail. But as important as that is to find out what is well functioning, what is normal, what is, for example, somehow okay in that family. For example, if the problem is with the adolescent person in family, we should remember that in puberty, people start to define their own identity in a different way compared to earlier stages of childhood. And these kind of changes are good tools somehow to study normality and pathology in that setting. Then we have to be, or the methods have to be sensitive enough to recognize the second order change. If first order change is described as the diminished role of symptoms, so second order change has to do with when we see change as something beyond symptom reduction. Symptom reduction is a good sign of change, but what makes this possible? For example, unarticulated rules of family interaction might have changed, and we should be able to recognize with our research tools that kind of changes in family life. This is very challenging part of for family therapeutic research methods. And one challenge in family therapy research is that these methods should include also somehow social psychology in them. It seems that time is running quite fast, and I have three or four slides still in my use, and I want to go through these. But since the number of you is so small, as participant of this lecture, we can go a brief kind of feedback circle round in the end of this. I try to be brief enough with these my slides, what I have still. I will provide you an example of research setting. A research setting was a quasi-experimental setting to study the impact and effect of systematic use of feedback system during the family therapeutic treatment of families with a child diagnosed with conduct and oppositional defiant disorders. And this was a curious setting because there was only one single variable planned to be different between the research group and the control group. This single variable was the use of feedback system. The therapists were their own controls, so that the same therapists took care of the treatment with both the groups. So they had a real interest in order to provide decent help for both of the groups, and it, the comparison control group was not something that they discussed their problems with some well-meaning person, but these persons were the same therapist. The aim was to collect data from a group of 40 cases. And the setting was like this, that the protocol for data collection for the research group was that there was this pre-treatment measures, development and well-being assessment, for example, a quite big web-based questionnaire which parents filled before the treatment began. Then, in the beginning, the treatment, the family members were asked about the everyday life in their family. The therapists draw the social network of the family from the perspective of the symptomatic child. Then there was this family questionnaire made, and parents' drug and alcohol use were asked in with this audit system, and there was were also asked these screening questions for intimate partner violence. And during the treatment process, these families who agreed to participate this research, their sessions were audiovisually recorded, and they constantly filled these feedback questionnaires. And in the end of treatment, they also refilled this SCORE family questionnaire, so that information was gathered from the beginning to the follow-up. And follow-up was made 18 months after the end of treatment, using part of the same measures that were used in the beginning of the treatment, and some of those measures were left out. And how it all went. What I found out that the staff was hesitant to participate, and in the end, some of the trained family therapists, even those who were trained to do family therapy with all their clients or all their child patients, didn't participate at all. This was for first surprise to me that they were not willing, and their boss, of course, couldn't make them participate. This was a really big surprise. It also seemed that in the clinic, family therapy was not recognized as an independent form of psychotherapy, but an additional extra resource, so that the treatment should be somehow made in family centered, as family centered treatment processes, not as family therapy. And when we were aiming to get 40 families in each group, it happened that the research group consisted only of 14 cases. And the follow-up interval had to be attuned at li little to the fact that not all the treatments could be ended in a reasonable time. We were prepared to record the family therapeutic sessions about 1 year. It was in the treatment contract, or and control group had much less than these 14 families, and the significant number of dropouts came especially from that control group. They didn't arrive to the follow-up interview, and these unfortunate things happened of led to the situations that the effect size of feedback system cannot be calculated or even estimated, nor really compared. The role of feedback system can be followed inside the families that use them, how the information has been taken advantage of, for example, in those treatment processes. On the other side, even if we didn't have this very rich quantitative data corpus, we received or got ourselves a rich data corpus of family therapy re recordings from both from the clinic and from the home settings. Part of these therapies were conducted at home, and those sessions have something different, so we could compare two ways of doing family therapy. And there is also a great number of feedback blankets with which to follow the course of therapy and the parallel processes to be observed from the recording. So this is what really took place. Okay, now I stop sharing this presentation, and then I do something. I take the list of participants here, and I want to hear some feedback from all of you. Emily, could you start?
Actually, I have a question concerning the last research you presented.
Please.
I wasn't here during a brief time, and I didn't understand how the trained family therapists did not participate.
It was not obligatory to participate. All the participation was voluntary. So, if, for example, if the child said that I don't sign this document, this contract, I don't want to participate, so those families were excluded. And the same happened with therapists. Therapists were not forced to participate because they have their work at that unit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Please. Heta.
Okay. I found this presentation very interesting, but I think some things went a little bit over my head. But that is
Okay.
probably because I'm first year psychology student, so I don't have much base knowledge about the research methods in general, but I thought
I
that
would
you
have
could bring.
recommended this participating this lecture after Juha Holmas' lecture about qualitative research methods. So maybe you can repeat this after 2 or 3 years But I interrupted you, excuse me.
Yeah, but I didn't have much else to say, but thank you.
Then we have HP. I have only the initials in my participant list, HP.
Hi, my name is Han Pham. I don't know why my name appear like that. Yeah, actually it's the first time I listen to the lecture about family therapy. And I read the article about like applying systematic therapy to family therapies, and I'm quite like confused about the difference between family therapy and system therapy, because like I understand from the system therapy that they apply the method to try to understand the context of the clients or the surrounding ecological environments.
Can I comment now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. For example, in USA, this difference between systems therapy and family therapy, it means that in the cases when the intercession there are some other persons than family members, then it's not allowed to call that session as a part of family therapy. But the therapists are very careful to define those as the systems therapy. That's one way of doing this differentiation. But other way of doing this differentiation is to when the therapists are applying systems theory as a leading orientational theoretical background for themselves, then they very gladly use the term systems therapy. My definition would be that all these couple and family therapies are systems therapy, but systems therapy can be done with other units, social units than couples and families.
Yes, I wonder, like, this seems to be quite a theoretical abstract things, but how can it be manifested in the real interaction between therapists and the clients?
Actually, it doesn't have that much impact on the live interaction situations, because we have to connect with those people who are present in the session in any case. So this is more the worry of therapists. This is not the worry for clients.
And I have another question regarding the article about the efficacy of the system therapy of a childhood and adolescent. And there is a term in the article that I'm not sure if I understand it. That is a random trials, or the RCT.
Randomized clinical trials, yeah.
Yeah. Can you give like more concrete and specific definition or explain of this method?
It's based on experimental thinking. It's important that in research group, the intervention includes that differentiating variable. And for example, in outcome research, it is typical to form the control groups from as a waiting list group, so that the intervention has not been started yet. So that when people are waiting for their own treatment to start, it is followed that how much development takes place during that waiting period. And which direction does it lead? Is it for good direction and improvement? what kind of changes take place, or are they into bad direction, so that symptoms becomes more severe, or the number of symptoms becomes bigger, and that way that is the part of the experimental setting, because psychotherapy as such is seen as an effective treatment. So it is unethical to leave people without treatment. So this waiting list method is the best way of comparing the situations nowadays. Okay, Lisa.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. I think that systemic theory is really interesting because studying...
So do I.
And so the part I found most interesting was the one on family therapy research. I understand that it is challenging, but I think it is important in order to give credit to family therapy. So I find it very interesting.
Thank you. Stefano? Is Stefano still present? If you are present, you have your microphone closed, so I cannot hear you, but if I don't get any questions from you, I thank you for your questions and your feedback. And I stop recording this session when I end this meeting, and hope you that you can have this some kind of orientation to this field of psychotherapy, and especially for this field of systemic therapies. Thank you.
Thank you.
Somehow you didn't ask me about the feedback or questions.
Okay.
Evgenia.
Please.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It was a very interesting topic for me. Like, I'm a master's degree student in psychology, so I'm quite familiar with general terms of psychotherapy and things like that. But to be honest, I didn't know much about family therapy, so your presentation was quite new to me and quite eye-opening to me.
Yeah.
All my questions have been already answered, basically, so I don't have anything more than that. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I just received a message from Stefanie that the microphone is not working, so we cannot help with that, but let's end this lecture here. And I thank you for your participation. Thank you.